you want to use real estate as a way to buy yourself time to start another business or to start something else. Try to, you know, figure out what other skill sets you have, and it allows you to obviously have the blessing of being able to enjoy your creative endeavors, like making music or your leisure time. But more importantly, if I didn't have the success earlier in finance and in real estate, I wouldn't have the time now to have built this whole marketing agency.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lote. I'm a real estate investor, and I focus on multifamily and self-storage investing. Today, we're joined by Zach Schnall, aka DJ Bander. He used his real estate portfolio to be able to focus on his true passion, which is music. He started by using his union wages and his early business success to save and invest in real estate, built that up, and used different strategies to accumulate a real estate portfolio to enable him to focus on his true passion, which is music. Today, we're going to dig into his journey, how he built it up, systems and strategies that he's used to have his real estate portfolio without it being a big job distracting him from his true passion. Thank you so much for joining us today. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you're up to these days, and tell us about your music before we dig into the real estate?
Sure. Thank you, Taylor, for the space. And you intro'd that very well. Today, my time is allocated and balanced between, as we discussed, my real estate, my marketing, and my music. And it's been quite a journey to get to that point. On the music side, I spent a lot of my time both focusing as a producer-composer. I grew up playing the piano as a child, and I have a background in jazz composition. I play keys. I've played the drums. I was a singer. I even was in the choir as a kid. And so music's always been very dear to my heart. I produce a range of music. My original style was hip-hop, down-tempo, that incorporated like East Coast-style drums with melodic symphony-style sounds. And that kind of developed into more... One of my huge influences is Moby. I think he's just a genius. And Moby influenced my sound in a huge way. I love doing film score style, down-tempo electronica. I'm working on several new releases in that world. But I'm also obviously a bander, and I do EDM house music as well. And I've had several successes in that world, top 10 EDM releases on iTunes. And I am focusing on those releases as well. So I do electronic music, a whole broad range. And then I perform sometimes at nightclubs here out in LA, where I premiere my singles or in the EDM space. And then on the downtempo side, I usually do a lot of really interesting releases that I put out and I promote on SoundCloud, separate from like my Spotify or my iTunes releases, because I find that they do very well on that platform. And so sometimes I bifurcate my music between my pro sort of mainstream releases and then my niche, like underground SoundCloud releases that I do to build my following and link that whole fan base to my social media platforms.
Awesome. So really getting to live your passion there with the music, but I really appreciate that you focused on getting your real estate, your wealth in place so that you would have essentially the financial means to be able to live that dream rather than being the classic example of a broke musician, which a lot of folks are familiar with. So let's dig into the real estate aspect and how you got started with your union wages and those first acquisitions to get you going.
Yeah. So I was very blessed to come from a good background of understanding about real estate. And I had a lot of training since I was young to understand the business. And I had a lot of connections to get work. And in fact, after I completed high school, when I moved out from New York out to LA, I moved back east to actually work at several businesses that I had connections to around real estate and really was living a very under my means lifestyle. I saved a lot of money. I was working all the time. I wasn't even at that point yet where I was doing my music that much. I was fully focused on growing my capital and building the connections and understanding about how real estate works. And what I eventually did was I invested some of that capital, went into some of the holdings that I now have out in here in downtown LA. So I initially invested in some warehouse spaces and export spaces that were much smaller as a minority investor. That's something that a lot of people aren't familiar with, but it's something that I highly recommend to my listeners. It's another way of getting into real estate. Instead of trying to purchase your own residential place on your own, for example, or getting into something, a lot of times you can get into bigger properties as a minority investor. And that's basically the way that I did it. I would get into sort of depreciated properties, especially during the time of 2008. And how I found a lot of my success with that was a couple of the properties I was invested in ended up getting acquired by the tenants themselves, who had different types of businesses, fabric, even one was cannabis growing, and they wanted to acquire the entire property. And that put, I was just very lucky in some ways that I'd gotten into properties that at the time were basically these opportunities to get purchased and be able to bring back a huge return. So after doing that, I 1031 exchanged several of those investments into a larger holding. And I now have a smaller position of a bigger property in that from that move, as well as was able to do extract some of the capital, do another refinance. And with that, I have a large portfolio in liquidity that I use to invest in real estate REITs, as well as real estate funds. So I'm a big fan of that, both in senior housing, as well as real estate funds. So it's a diversified portfolio in that sense, mainly based around real estate.
Great. So I think a lot of folks, when they have a passion, something they really want to focus on, and they want to invest in real estate, the concern about the real estate investing is that it's just going to take way too much time. It's going to distract me from the true passion. So sure, you set things up so that your real estate investments wouldn't be a huge investment of your time and focus, but you're still leveraging the efforts and the work of others, essentially, if I'm understanding the strategy correctly. How do you go about identifying the right opportunities for you, investment opportunities?
I 100%. I think the main focus is the fact that a lot of times where people get it caught up is that they don't have other skill sets to monetize. So they're completely dependent only on the real estate income. And therefore, they take on everything because they don't want to afford to take some of the cash flow and invest in management. So one thing that I've always done is I've had no problem taking a much smaller portion of the income and focus on making sure that I have good management in place. So that's something that's like really important. Another advantage to getting involved as an investment, as a minority holder into a bigger property, is that usually those investments already have management in place. So you're buying into a property that where not only the management is there, but they understand the property, they understand the needs and the issues that come up. And also, I tell a lot of people, who you hire as a manager and who's doing it, it is so fundamentally important to how much at the end of the day you have a free cash flow when it comes to actually your distributions. Because you can have a corporate style manager where everything works really well, but anytime there's an issue, they spend the top dollar and they bring in, if there's a cleaning that needs to be done or there's painting, and those expenses, your capital expenses, really can add up. So one thing that's really important to me is that I am, first of all, highly involved as a managing partner with whatever operational managers are in place. So they have to, I make sure that they answer to me in terms of like where they're spending, who are their sources for their vendors, who's going to come and do the painting, who's going to come and fix the electrical, the gate's not working, how much did that person charge, how about we talk to this guy again? And because those little decisions really add up. And at the end of the day, you'd be surprised how much the sourcing of vendors by the property managers really can help you to understand your bottom line.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they might use their preferred guy who's maybe not the most cost effective, or they're not really shopping around for you.
Exactly.
So you've changed asset classes and types over the years as you've diversified your portfolio and grown. How did you approach that desire to get into different asset classes and find the right asset classes for you? Because there are a huge number of choices in real estate investing. How did you hone in on the right ones for you after the warehouse?
Well, you know, to be honest, to be completely real, I got into the opportunities that I could afford that had good cash flows and that did well. Even some of the industrial thing properties that I'm in, they are good cash flowing properties, but they're not even the top level of properties that I aspire to be invested in. But sometimes people have to understand that you work what's working. So I've learned that I have an understanding that works about industrial real estate. I understand it. One thing that I like about it is what I like about industrial is that a lot of the leases are much longer. and you have an ability to raise rents and have a stronger IRR than in residential. So, or even certain commercial spaces. So with industrial, a lot of times you'll get 7-8 year leases and they'll have renewals and increases each year. And not only that, but you can make much higher percentages of commissions on those real estate tenants when they come in. So what really got me involved in that is the fact that I knew and understood it. I'd worked at that business and I had the opportunities to get into those type of properties. So that was really the main reason I got into it. And then I've known a lot about senior housing most of my life. My family's been very involved in that space. So I've always known that's a really strong real estate sector. And I invest in actual equity index positions that in literally like a ETF, like senior ETFs, as well as senior housing REITs. And I've done very well with that in terms of reinvesting my capital into those, because I've known that we're in a demographic shift where those properties are going to become more and more valuable as not only baby boomers, but just as there's a housing crisis for lower to middle income seniors. So that's been something that I've been involved in for years and done quite well in.
So having invested, and especially early in your career, focusing on the LA area and getting that first warehouse, those first few in the 08 crash, compared to today, prices are a lot higher today than they were back then. Where do you rank the opportunity in that space today, especially as compared to how it was back then? Is there opportunity in that space there today?
There is, if you find the right, there's definitely opportunities to get into that space. However, I would say that if a property is at a very good price and it seems, wow, this is an unbelievable deal, there's usually some sort of an issue with it. Either they're having trouble renting the property, or there's structural issues with the property, or there's something that's going to be like under the hood that you're going to figure out it's a little iffy. In fact, it is really difficult, which is why how I've increased my wealth from about 2000 and say 16, 17 until now has actually been in the way that I've been operating my two ways, from my capital management side by doing good investments and building my liquidity, as well as my marketing agency, my other business. So even for right now, I've been, especially with where rates are, I've also hit my own glass ceiling with the real estate side where I have my holdings and I'm doing well there. But it is unfortunately very difficult. And I tell people that it's very difficult when a lot of my older family and friends were involved in investing in real estate in like the 80s and 90s in LA. There were incredible opportunities where people were picking up properties for $300,000 and turning them around for $1 million, $2 million. That was like a regular occurrence. Now, unfortunately, it takes millions of dollars to make like $1 billion. If you want to make $1 million, you need $6 million of liquid to make, and then you make seven. And so a lot of times that's why, unless you're just very wealthy and you have a lot of liquidity on hand, it's better to get into deals that are like inside deals where people know they have a special connection and you can get in with a small amount of capital, but you're going to get a much higher return because the deal is set up where they have everything in place, even whether it's commercial or residential. They have a couple homes they're going to buy on a certain block and they know that it's going to work. It really comes down to your relationships and your network. So I definitely recommend to your listeners that they really branch out and build your network and connect with those high level firms that are really doing stuff and are really making moves, because that's going to be your best opportunity to get something off market. Once it's hit MLS, you know, you're kind of already buying a bit of the inflation in it.
Totally agreed. Yeah. Real estate is definitely a who you know type of industry. So let's talk a bit about your 1031 exchange experience. For those out there who aren't familiar, the 1031 exchange is something that real estate investors can use to sell a property that's appreciated and defer the capital gains tax and depreciation recapture tax potentially indefinitely if you do it correctly and keep rolling it forward. So in your 1031 exchanges, what was that like going through those processes? It's definitely complicated. It's a headache to get the deal done, but well worth it.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. I only was involved in a very kind of detail level with one of the exchanges. But the one that I was involved with was what I found difficult, was that I got out of one property and had to pivot it into another property investment that was a land lease deal. And so what I learned was that luckily I had very good accountants, very good lawyers, and they were able to make the deal happen. But the most complex thing about 1031 exchanges is that sometimes there are lots of regulations about the type of property that you roll one property into to the other. So you, that's where you can get yourself into a lot of challenges, because and individuals have to make the decision, because there was one deal where I decided not to do the 1031 exchange and I actually decided to just sell it and take the cash. Because when you do a 1031 exchange, you have to balance two things. One is the value and the yield of the new property that you're going to get into going to be better or worse. If it's going to be worse, are you going to be benefiting from the overall value of the property? And if it's going to be better, then okay, then it's a no-brainer. You go forward with it. But sometimes you have to balance, would I be better off selling it, paying the taxes, but then now I have liquidity that I could potentially invest at a better yield? So for example, if a cap rate on a property is say 5%, but you actually have an opportunity to make a 10 or 11% on say a corporate bond, it depending on the rate environment, you might be better off selling, paying the tax, and then moving your liquidity into a different environment. I did that one time as well. And that ended up being a good thing. As far as what the process is, I think for the most part, it's something that you hire somebody to deal with, a specialist, whether it be a broker or an attorney who handles the land lease. The most complicated thing is that people need to make sure they have a plan for where they're going to roll the capital into, because there's obviously time limitations and there's also property type limitations. So you don't want to get into a situation where you sell one property and then you go into another type of property and it's not, and it's, you end up having problems later.
So for the 1031 exchanges that you weren't closely involved with, did you outsource a lot of that activity, or was it like a partnership structure that all rolled together? What was that like for
A partnership that I was involved in, and they ended up rolling the property in. And I was just, because I was a minority partner, I just ended up with a piece of the bigger property. And then the other time that I was more involved in it, it was actually when we did the sale for the cannabis growers, which was during this time where it was just becoming legal. And I was very lucky to be kind of in this time where what was happening was cannabis growers, because at the time it wasn't quite where it is now, and that's a whole other conversation because it's really changed the landscape of industrial real estate in Los Angeles. And it's really crazy what's going on in that world. But during this time, it was just becoming legal. And a lot of times landlords were getting very fortunate because obviously some of these growers had huge amounts of money, even more money than the landlords. And they could be in situations where they just would be, it was easier for them to get rid of the landlord and just buy them out. And so that was an opportunity where I did that. But in that situation, we ended up starting the process of 1031 exchange. But that was one where I ended up just actually just going through with the sale and paying the tax. Because a lot of times it's complicated, like who the original owners are and where the property is and what's going on. You open yourself up to a lot when you're doing the 1031 exchange. So it's just important to make sure you have all your ducks in a row and everything's aligned. As far as like the intricacies of the 1031 exchange, I would say I'm knowledgeable. But a lot of that, for sure, I outsource. And that's another reason why I believe in paying property management and making sure that whoever is involved in those processes and having a very good attorney. I'm always somebody who's very grateful for my legal advice around these decisions.
So what do things look like for you moving forward? Because a lot of folks dream of getting to the point where they have income coming in from their real estate, and you have another business, like you mentioned, your online marketing agency, so they can focus, as you do, on their passion, your passion being your music. What do things look like moving forward as you continue to grow, as you continuing to invest in real estate? You reach the promised land, right? What's the plan?
I guess. Yeah, of course. Everybody, I always aspire to have more. I'd love to have more properties. What I've learned, and I was actually speaking about this with someone recently, I've realized that my skill set to the music industry and with my marketing agency now is actually where I believe a lot of the growth can now come for, in terms of not only my income, but in terms of my new capital that I can invest in real estate. Because a lot of times the problem is, like, when you invest in real estate, using real estate, it's got to be done in such a way where rates make sense and you're at the timing of the market makes sense. Because really what you can just be doing is increasing your debt to acquire more assets. And when you really kind of do the math, you're not really increasing your net worth. What I'm finding now is that I'm almost in a more of a kind of a holding pattern with my real estate. It's growing, debt on it is decreasing, cash flow is increasing, and I'm saving as almost all of it. And at the same time, I'm much more now living off of my marketing agency and my stock trading. So what I'm doing is building my capital with the real estate and saving as well from these other businesses. And my goal is to build my capital up so that when there's another real estate crash, I'm in an even better capital position to go into new deals. So what I tell people and what my belief is that you want to use real estate as a way to buy yourself time to do to start another business or to start something else. Now, there's a lot of people who you can be a deal maker. You go from one real estate deal to the next real estate deal and you stay leveraged and you do that. I'm not really that type of a real estate investor. I have people that I know in my family and dear friends who are incredibly successful at that. And I'm always like, mazel tov. It's amazing to watch. And I've benefited from being able to hop into some of those people's deals. But that's an art and a craft within itself. That is, you have to be 120% dedicated to only doing real estate. And that's, if you want to make millions of dollars doing, that's great. But my strategy is build a portfolio of real estate that's good enough for you to make a living and for your bills to be paid and for you to save something. And now you have free time to try to figure out what other skill sets you have. And it allows you to obviously have the blessing of being able to enjoy your creative endeavors, like making music or your leisure time. But more importantly, if I didn't have the success earlier in finance and in real estate, I wouldn't have the time now to have built this whole marketing agency, which I really enjoy doing almost more than real estate because I get to help people with their brands and I get to like actually do something one-on-one. Real estate's great and I enjoy it because it's obviously everybody likes to make money and everything, but it's a little bit more impersonal versus what I like doing in agencies. I literally get to help other people make money and build their brand. So that's more satisfying for me, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the real estate enabled you to get other income snowballs going as well. So
yeah.
Awesome. Right now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com, scroll down to the Stessa logo, and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. Number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
I was thinking about this earlier, and while there's several books that I love, one is Cycles of Economic Theory. That one's great, but I have to go with the cliche one that everybody reads about that knows, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And the reason I say that is because a huge element of my own success, the reason why I bring up kind of the cliche economic book is because I came from a very similar background where I had two different styles of families on my mother's side and my father's side. One was very successful and had a lot of connections and was very smart with their money. And the other one had a little bit more struggle and came from a much more difficult background. And I learned from the mistakes of some family members, just like I learned from the success of others. And that's what made me so careful and so conservative with my own finances. And I think one of the big issues moving forward for investors, it's not just making money, it's keeping it. It's holding on to it and being able to have to control greed and lifestyle and wanting people make a certain amount of money. Let's say they finally make 100 grand a year, but they try to live like they're making 250, or they make 250 and they have to show that they're making 500. And you'll never get to the next level if you live like that. So what I always tell people is try to live on a half to two thirds of what you make. And if you do that, you have no choice but to make money and have more. It's simple. It's like losing weight with a calorie deficit. It's the same thing. You know, I would say that book more than anything really shaped my thinking on it. And I hope that other people really, because that's really what separates a lot of people. I know a lot of people who make a lot of money, but they're constantly struggling every month financially. And it's not because they're bad earners. It's because they're bad savers and they're bad spenders.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Question number two, who or what inspires you?
I'm inspired by the most successful of the entrepreneurs who still stay grounded and in touch and really cool and with their ear to the grindstone, like the Mark Cubans and certain people that have really made something of themselves and yet have also fight to stay relevant and down to earth at the same time. I think that's a hard balance. And I think that's something that, you know, is really important. So from a business standpoint, I would say that. And then, of course, I have many musical inspirations in film and cinema. I love, you know, some of my creatives. I'm a big film fan. So I'm always inspired by like Michael Mann and Moby, as I mentioned, on the music side. So depending on whether I've got my business hat on or my music hat on, I would say those are like my types of inspirations.
Nice. Question number three. Think about yourself at 80 years old. If you could have a call with Zach, aka DJ Bander, at 80 years old, what advice or feedback do you think 80-year-old Zach would give to Zach of today?
I would definitely think that 80-year-old Zach would have told me, I hope you learn to relax more and enjoy your time. I think that would be the main thing, because I know that's always been a challenge for myself. I'm a natural worrier. I'm always thinking about the future. But I would hope that 80-year-old Zach would have the same advice that I have for myself at this age, which is to live by your own rules and live by what works for you. I've never felt like I've succumbed to the pressure of being in a lifestyle that I didn't want to live in. And I've never rushed to those decisions. And I would hope that 80-year-old Zach would be proud of younger Zach that I made those choices for myself.
Nice. I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing this knowledge and your journey to build your real estate portfolio so that you could live your passion and your true dreams. If folks want to get in touch or learn more about you, where can they find you?
Oh, sure. I appreciate that to the time, Taylor. Yeah, I would love for everybody to, the main hub for most of my stuff is Instagram. I love that because I can interact with people. So you can find me at DJ Bander, DJ B-A-N-D-E-R on Instagram. And for my marketing agency, if I can help any people with investment or small businesses, be sure to check out my website, banderproductions.com. That links them to my agency. And if they have any questions, shoot me a DM on Instagram and happy to set up a call with them and see how I can support.
Awesome. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day. And we'll talk to you on the next one. Great. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.